All right, so Shavua Tov, everyone. As I mentioned, Baruch Hashem, we had a wonderful Shabbat Shuva Drasha this evening, earlier this afternoon at Shul. We had close to 100 people in attendance, Baruch Hashem. But I'm happy that we're able to do this now for those that were unable to be there in person. And what I want to discuss tonight is really a part of the Haggadah that really actually is a part of the Haggadah that easily can get lost in all the details. But I'm sure it's a part of the Haggadah that everyone here is familiar with, because it's, you know, we know we start the Haggadah, right? Kadesh, Orchatz, Karpas, Yachatz. And then we start Magid with the four questions. And then we, after Manashtana, so then we go into some details and also some stories to help frame the mitzvah of telling over the story of leaving Egypt, of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. And then we get to the four sons, and then we get to one of the equally remembered parts of the Seder that I'm sure we're all familiar with, and that is the part of the Seder where, you know, the page counting begins, that part of the Seder where you're up to right after the four sons and you start counting pages at that point to figure out how long it's going to take to get up to Shulchan Aruch. And you start doing some quick math in your head where if we've been spending the last 6 minutes on every single page till now, and we have about 10 pages left until Shulchan Aruch, so we'll be finished in about 4.5 hours. That part of the Seder actually is one of the most important parts of the entire Seder. And it is one of the parts of the Seder that really frames the entire Yontif and what our goal of the Seder is supposed to be. Because it's very easy to get lost in all of the details. It's very easy to get lost in all of the prep that leads, and all the details are important, but all the prep leading up to the yontif, the cleaning, the koshering, making sure that all the shopping is done, all the cooking is done, and then on the yontif itself, all of the details of the yontif, and then, of course, the Seder itself. The Vilna Gaon writes that there are 64 different mitzvos we fulfill the night of the Seder. I mean, is there an evening that's more detailed than the night of the Seder? And because of all those details, it's very easy to get lost in what it is that we're actually trying to accomplish. But when we get to this part of the Haggadah, it frames for us an amazing, profound lesson of a goal that we're trying to accomplish during the Seder. And that is the part right here in the Haggadah where we get to Tzei Ulmad, where we're told by the Haggadah that we need to come learn the following. What is it that we're about to learn? We're about to learn and analyze verses in the Torah about Yetzias Mitzrayim, about the Exodus. Now, these verses are not from where you may think they would have belonged. For example, they're not verses in Sefer Shmos. They're not verses in Parshat Shmos, Va'era, Bo, B'Shalach, where there's 15 chapters just about in Sefer Shmos in the Torah that actually are dealing with the narrative of Yetzias Mitzrayim in real time. That's not where these verses are from that we're going to be analyzing in the Haggadah about the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim, but rather we're going to be analyzing verses from Sefer Devarim, actually towards the end of Sefer Devarim, where there is a mitzvah of Havos Bikurim, of bringing the first fruits to the Beis HaMikdash. And in addition to bringing the first fruits to the Beis HaMikdash, there's also the mitzvah that when we arrive with our first fruits at the Beis HaMikdash, we need to make a declaration when we bring those first fruits to the Kohen. And that is this declaration that we have when we bring the Bikurim, and contained in that declaration, in fact, the majority of that declaration is actually about Yetzias Mitzrayim. Altogether, it's about 4 verses in length, the entire 4 or 5 verses in length, the entire declaration. It's very short. And contained in that declaration is thanking Hashem for the fact that he took us out of Egypt. He brought us to the land, and now we're bringing our first fruits to Yerushalayim. It's those verses that is the most succinct description of Yetzias Mitzrayim that we analyze in the Haggadah. And that's what we have over here in source number one by Magid, where it's on page, it starts on page 32 in the family Haggadah. And it's for the next three or four pages in the Haggadah where we're going to be analyzing these verses, like over here, by the cursor over here, Arami Oved Avi Vayered Mitzrayma, that we speak about how Lavan tried to destroy Yaakov, and then Yaakov ended up going down to Mitzrayim, and he settled there. This is all the pasuk in the Torah. Vayisham goy gadol, and then he turned into a great nation. You know, the Jewish people, gadol atzum varav, and all of the verses of the declaration are analyzed now at this point in the Haggadah, and that's what happens over here by each bolded area. Each bolded is breaking down the pasuk one by one. We're breaking down the pasuk, Vayered Mitzrayma, and then we analyze it. Vayegor Sham, and that we settled there, and then analyze it. In Tema'at, there were just a few of us that we analyze it. Kemosha and Amar, as the pasuk says, that Bishivim Nefesh, that were only 70 of us when we first went down to Mitzrayim with Yaakov Veinu V'Yisham Ligoy, but then we became a nation, and we analyze that. So each of these bolded are picking out a part of this declaration and analyzing it further, in order to give over in full form the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim. And here are all the verses in order. These are the psukim in Parshas Ki Tavo about the mitzvah of bringing the Bikurim, where the Torah tells us va'anita va'amarta lifnei Hashem lo'vecha, that we are supposed to declare before Hashem and say the following, Arami Oved Avi, that Yaakov, that Lavan tried to kill Yaakov Avinu, or tried to eradicate Yaakov Avinu, Vayered Mitzrayma, and Yaakov went after me. And then we go through this whole declaration. Next pasuk is Vayiru Otanu HaMitzrim, that the Egyptians did terrible things to us. I gave us hard work. Next verse, pasuk Zion, Vayitzak. This is all the declaration we do with our first fruits. Vayitzak El Hashem, and then we cried out to God. Vayishma Hashem Eskolinu, and Hashem heard our voices. He heard our davening. Vayaris Kaminu, he saw our suffering. And then the next verse, Pasuk Chet, also part of the declaration. Be'atziyenu Hashem in Mitzrayim. Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim b'yad chazakah, in a miraculous fashion. The next part of the declaration, Pasuk Tet. Be'avienu ala makom hazeh. And then, after this amazing miracle, Hashem brought us to the land of Israel. And then the end, the conclusion of the declaration is Ve'ata. And now, me standing here, hine heveti et reishis pri ha'adama, I'm bringing the first fruit of this land to the temple in Yerushalayim. After this declaration is made, then the hanachto, that I place it lifnei Hashem lokecha, v'yishtachavita lifnei Hashem lokecha, I give it to you, Hashem, and I bow in front of Hashem. And then the conclusion of this entire episode is in Pasuk Yud Aleph, in the 11th verse, v'samachta b'chol hatov asher nasan lecha Hashem lokecha, that now we are able to rejoice in all of the goodness that Hashem gives us. So this is the mitzvah of not only bringing the Bikurim, but also Mikra Bikurim, the declaration that we make when we bring our Bikurim. And it's in these verses, as contained within them is the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim. It's these verses that we analyze in the Haggadah. It's those verses we analyze in the Haggadah. Now, the basic, obvious question that needs to be asked here is, what, there weren't enough verses in the narrative of Yetzias Mitzrayim? That somewhere in the first 15 chapters of Sefer Shmos, there have to have been more appropriate verses to analyze when we're talking about the narrative of Yetzias Mitzrayim. If the goal here is Sefer Yetzias Mitzrayim is telling over the story of the Exodus, so then presumably there would have been much more appropriate verses to use from the actual narrative itself. Why are we jumping to another place in the Torah that we talk about Yetzias Mitzrayim? By the way, there's other places in the Torah we talk about Yetzias Mitzrayim that are not quoted in the Haggadah. So why are we specifically quoting these verses about Bikurim, about the declaration we make when we bring our first fruits? And then second is, there has to be a really, really good reason for us to elongate the Seder, to elongate, to add on to the Haggadah, specifically with the declaration of the Bikurim. Because, frankly, most of the information that we get from this part of the Haggadah, we already learned at some other point in our discussions that evening. So then why is it that we need to now add on to the Haggadah, specifically with these psukim about Bikurim, about the declaration of the first fruit? So let's deal with the first question. The first question is, well, how did this make it into the Haggadah in the first place, right? As we said, there are plenty of other verses in Sefer Shmos that we can use to talk about the story of the Haggadah. So there must be a reason why specifically the mitzvah of Mikra Bikurim, the mitzvah of declaring the Bikurim, and analyzing the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim in that context, needed to make it into the Haggadah. So the answer really comes from a Gemara that actually deals with matzah. The Gemara in Masechta Pesachim on Lamed Vav Amud Aleph is trying to explain and deal with what is it to be learned from the fact that matzah is referred to as lechem oni. Now, oni basically means that it's poor man's bread. Lechem oni, it's poor man's bread, like an ani. Which is why there is an opinion that says, because of the fact that it's poor man's bread, what is there to be learned from there? So the Gemara explains this means that the only ingredients in matzah are basic ingredients, flour and water and nothing else. That if there's other ingredients added in, it's not going to make it chametz, like eggs or fruit juice or wine and the like, but it would make it invalid to be used at the Seder to fulfill my mitzvah of matzah based on this verse of lechem oni, because of the fact that the Torah calls it lechem oni, bread that is a bread of a poor man, therefore it should only have flour and water. That's one opinion in the Gemara. However, there's another opinion in the Gemara that says that, no, this is actually coming to teach me something else. Comes along the Gemara and says, Rabbi Akiva, hai de karinin be oni. Why does Rabbi Akiva, according to Rabbi Akiva, why is it called oni? Kiddush Shmuel, like what Shmuel writes, because the Amar Shmuel, as Shmuel writes, why is it called lechem oni? Why is it called a quote-unquote lechem oni? What does that word oni come to teach me? That it's lechem she'onin alav devarim harbe. That it is bread that many things are recited in front of. Onin means recited. That's actually, we saw that word a little earlier in the verse about Bikurim. The recitation we're supposed to make when we bring our Bikurim, the Torah opens that by saying the anita v'amarta. We're supposed to make the following declaration. We're supposed to recite something when we bring our Bikurim. That is what matzah is. It's bread that we recite a lot of things in front of. She'onin alav devarim harbe. That we recite a lot of things in front of matzah. Now, what are the things we're reciting in front of matzah? So Rashi HaKadosh, the greatest of all commentators, Rashi from Troyes, France, 1040 to 1105, there's not enough time to describe how impactful Rashi has been in Jewish literature and in Torah learning. Rashi HaKadosh, in his commentary on the Gemara over there, explains, what are the things that we are onin? What are the things we are reciting in front of this lechem, in front of this bread, in front of the matzah? Rashi says, she'onin alav devarim. We are reciting things in front of them. What are the things? She'gomrim alav es halel. We recite halel. Ve'omrim alav haggadah. And the haggadah in front of the matzah. That's why we need to make sure we keep the matzah on the table throughout the duration of the Haggadah and throughout the duration of Halal, because that is what the Gemara meant, according to Rashi, that when we recite Haggadah and Halal, it should be done in front of this matzah, because matzah is lechem, it's bread that is oni, it's bread that has these things recited before it. However, comes along Rav Meir Simcha of Dvinsk, the Or Sameach, more obviously much more contemporary than Rashi, from 1843 to 1926, he was an incredible, not only Talmud Chacham, an incredible Ohev Yisrael, an incredible Anav, an incredibly humble individual. And in fact, his very, very close friend was the Rugachever Gaon. They were Chavrusas, him and the Rugachever. The Rugachever, when people would go to him to ask for blessings, he'd say, "Why are you coming to me to ask for a blessing? You should go to the Kohen Gadol," referring to Rav Meir Simcha Dvinsk was a Kohen, and he referred to his great Chavrusa as the Kohen Gadol of our generation. Rav Meir Simcha Dvinsk was unbelievable. In fact, he is the only contemporary of the Chafetz Chaim that's quoted by the Chafetz Chaim in the Mishnah Berurah. That's how great he was. So the Or Sameach says, I have two issues with this explanation from Rashi. Again, Rashi said that what is it that we're reciting in front of the matzah, meaning that there's a special halacha, a new law that is being that is being legislated by the Torah of something we need to recite in front of matzah. What are those things? Rashi said, Haggadah and Hallel. Says the Or Sameach, I have two problems with that. Number one, Hallel was instituted when? Was instituted by the rabbis generations later. The Torah predates everything. It definitely predates the rabbinic institution of reciting Hallel. So if that's the case, when the Torah tells me I need to be reciting something in front of this bread, it couldn't have been referring to Hallel, because Hallel only came into being much, much later. And number two, is the Haggadah being recited in front of the matzah? We already have a verse to tell me that. The Gemara learns from the verse of Vihigat Labincha that I need to tell over the sword to my children. It says, on the night Shiyesh Matzah Umar Munachim Mefanecha, that when matzah and maror is sitting in front of me, that's when I'm supposed to be telling over the story. So I already have a source to tell me that I have to be telling over the story in front of matzah. So then what is this new legislation that's being created by the Torah of something that I need to recite in front of this lechem, in front of the matzah? It can't be referring to Hallel, because that was only instituted much later. And it can't be referring to the Haggadah, because I already have a verse to tell me that I have to do that in front of matzah. So what's this new institution, this new obligation of lechem oni, that I need to recite something in front of the matzah in addition to those things? So it comes along Rav Meir Simcha Dvinsk to say, mikra bikurim. It's referring to the declaration we make when we bring our bikurim, when we bring our first fruits to the Beis HaMikdash. That is the reason why we have the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim borrowed from the context of the bikurim, borrowed from the context of the declaration we make when we bring our first fruits, and that's how it made it into the Haggadah. That's what he writes. He says that Mishum Detzarch Lidrosh Parsha de Bikurim. This is a new halacha coming to teach me. I need to analyze the Parsha Bikurim, Dichsiv Be Lashon Aniya. Because as we saw before, the word Oni, Lechem Oni, has also the same word by Mikra Bikurim. The declaration we make by the Bikurim, it says Va'anita Va'amarta, is the same word to recite. So therefore, it must be the Gemara was telling me that Lechem Oni, I need to recite Oni. I need to do the formal recitation of Mikra Bikurim, of the recitation when I bring my first fruits the night of the Seder, and I need to analyze that specific parsha. So now we've dealt with that first question. The first question is, why is it that we are analyzing these verses about Yetzias Mitzrayim, about the Exodus, when there are other, presumably more appropriate verses to use, the ones that actually come from the context of the narrative of the Exodus from Sefer Shmos? We didn't use those. In fact, we used these verses because there's a special halacha that I need to analyze the verses of Mikra Bikurim in front of matzah. However, we didn't deal with the second question, which is, why is it that I need to analyze these verses of the Bikurim with matzah? Meaning to say, we didn't answer the question of what's the connection between a Bikurim the bringing of the first fruits and what we're trying to accomplish the night of the Seder. What's the connection between the two? So in order to better appreciate this, we need to get a better understanding of why it is that we make a declaration. What are we trying to do when we bring our first fruits to Yerushalayim? So comes along the Sefer HaChinuch. The Sefer HaChinuch was written anonymously in the 13th century. It's a compilation of the 613 mitzvos with a beautiful explanation for every mitzvah. He writes in the introduction that he wrote it as a bar mitzvah gift to his son, so that way his son can learn the Sefer HaMitzvos, can understand the 613 mitzvos, he can learn with his friends on Shabbos afternoon. It must have been some amazing group of kids that this is the way they're spending the Shabbos afternoon, is to learn the Sefer HaMitzvos. This is why he wrote the book. So for every mitzvah, he tries to give a brief explanation as to what it is that we're trying to accomplish through this mitzvah in the general understanding of what the Torah outlook for us personally in our life should be. So he writes where he says, the Mesharshe HaMitzvah, the underlying purpose of this mitzvah, of making a declaration when we come to the Beis HaMikdash with our first fruits, he says, because we have a stream of consciousness. We're always thinking. People are always thinking. And therefore, in order for us to formulate the things that are actually important, so then it can't be just left in the annals of our mind and our memory, because it's going to get lost in the stream of consciousness. Rather, we need to verbalize it. And then through the power of our words, we're going to be able to really formulate how important this idea is, what we're trying to express. Al kein therefore, behetiv halav Hashem baruch hu, that when Hashem has blessed us with whatever it is that he blesses us with, ubarcho oso, and for this particular person, he's blessed this person who's bringing their new fruit with all this produce, at admasol asos peros, he blessed this person and he blessed their field with this fruit. And not only did he bless this person that they should have for themselves a piece of Eretz Yisrael, not only is it that he has a piece of Eretz Yisrael, but that his farm produces fruit. And not only does it produce fruit, but now he has an opportunity to actually engage with Hashem and bring it up to the Beis HaMikdash. That's unbelievable. Ro'ila. Therefore, it is so appropriate and fitting for this person, l'orer l'vavo b'divrei pihu, to properly express this feeling that he has. Because if he just leaves this feeling of gratitude in his mind, it's going to get lost in the other stream of consciousness. Therefore, he needs to go up to Yerushalayim with his first fruit and express his gratitude to Hashem. In fact, the Mishnah talks at length about how this was an amazing ceremony that took place, that when the first fruit came, so then we would tie a ribbon when it was still on the branch, we tie a ribbon in order to show that zu bikurim, that this is going to be used as our first fruit. And then once we're ready with our basket, we put the fruit in the basket and we decorate the basket. We bring it up to Yerushalayim. And there was a whole parade on the day that the bikurim, the new fruit, were brought, a whole huge procession that would take place in magnificent fashion with these first fruit. And this fellow with his tenna, with his basket and all the amazing fruit, would hand it to the Kohen and would declare, thank you, Hashem, not only for right now, but Arami Ovid Avi, but I understand that me even standing and being alive is something miraculous, because Yaakov could have been destroyed by Lavan, and then I wouldn't be here at all. And Vayered Mitzrayim, not only that, but my ancestors, they went down to Mitzrayim. He went down to Mitzrayim and they settled there. But then ultimately, Vayirotanu HaMitzrim. But then the Mitzrim tried to destroy us. But you know what, Hashem? You didn't let that happen, because Nitzakel Hashem Elokei Avoseinu, because you heard our cries. Vayishmas Kolenu, you listened to, we davened and you listened to everything we said. You saw our pain. And then the Yotzienu Hashem in Mitzrayim, you took us out of Mitzrayim in the most miraculous fashion possible. Vayavienu el ha-makom hazeh, and you brought us to this place. You brought me to Eretz Yisrael. You brought our ancestors to Eretz Yisrael. Vayitin lanu es ha-aretz. You didn't just give us any land. You didn't just give us a place of refugees. You gave us the greatest place in the world. Ha-aretz hazos, this land. That's Eret Zavat Chalav Udvash, a land that's flowing with milk and honey. The Ata, and now me, possibly hundreds of years later, I'm coming. Hinei Vetius Reishis Pri Adama, and you actually gave us produce, gave us fruit to come from this land. This is miraculous. I'm a walking miracle. It's miraculous what's happening right now. And therefore, Natata li Hashem, you've given this to me, v'hanachta lifnei Hashem, I'm going to give it to you. And there, v'ashtacha visa lifnei Hashem lokecha. And then, how can I not bow before you, Hashem, for this incredible gift that you've given me, all of these miracles that you've given me in my life? And then what's the natural result of that? Verse 11, v'samachta b'chol hatov asher natan lecha Hashem lokecha l'veisach. And then therefore, the natural response is overwhelming joy over everything you give me and us, Hashem. That's the message of the Bikurim. And that is what we need to bring out during our Siddurim. That during our Siddurim, it's not enough just to talk about what happened in the past. And if we talk about and elaborate what happened in the past, that's wonderful and it's praiseworthy. However, we need to make sure that we realize that all those miracles have a direct impact on my life today. I wouldn't be sitting here right now if not for the miracles Hashem did in Mitzrayim, and then all of the endless, infinite amount of miracles that Hashem has constantly done for me in my life to make it to this Seder table. And these two aspects of the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, of telling over the story in an elaborated, incredible fashion, to give over that emunah to the next generation, is something that's praiseworthy and needs to be done. The mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. But then there's a second part of what we do with that story and recognize that I need to have hakaras hatov beyond that story. Recognize that everything that happened to them is miraculous, but my life is just as miraculous. And these two aspects are highlighted in the Haggadah. Earlier in the Haggadah, right after Manishtana, where we go through the four questions, and then we say the answer to the four questions. In fact, a lot of people don't realize that. The paragraph of Ava Demayinu is the answer to the four questions. Why do we do all these unique things the night of the Seder? The answer is Ava Demayinu Lefar B'Mitzrayim, because we were slaves to Paro in Egypt. In fact, many Gedol Yisrael, that's their minhag at their Seder, is that they actually say, that the answer is, they actually say that line. The answer is, in order to show that you ask the question, here's the answer. The reason that everything's so different is because Avadimayim, Lefar B'Mitzrayim, because we were slaves in Egypt, and we go through the story, Hashem took us out, et cetera, et cetera. And then how do we conclude that paragraph? The more we talk about Yetzias Mitzrayim, it's praiseworthy and amazing. But then, towards the end of Magid, we say that it's not enough just to have this as something that happened in the past and talk around the past, and that it's praiseworthy to talk about what happened to the Jewish people then. But the chol dor v'dor, but in every generation, chayiv adam lirat et atzmo kiilu yatzei Mitzrayim. I need to view myself as if I left Mitzrayim. Comes along the Brisker Rav and explains that is ostensibly impossible to be able to actually view oneself as if they're leaving Mitzrayim. Right. I mean, even take somebody that had a similar experience. Take somebody like my grandfather, Zecher Tzadik B'Kadosh Livracha, that he was in Auschwitz from the age of 11 and a half to 14 years old. He witnessed countless murders. He himself was almost murdered three times by the Nazis, beat this close to death. He himself was a walking miracle. He was the only surviving member of his family. His father was taken away from him. He literally saw his mother being taken away from him. I don't know whether or not what he experienced was worse than what the Jewish people experienced in Mitzrayim, or what B'nai Yisrael experienced in Mitzrayim was worse than the Holocaust, I have no way of knowing that. But what I do know is those were two different experiences. And therefore, it's really impossible for anyone to ever experience what someone else experienced because it didn't happen to them. So then how could the Haggadah, and really this is in the Mishnah, how could Chazal obligate us to view ourselves as if we're leaving Egypt if that's impossible? Comes along the Brisk Rav and says that the key word is ki'ilu, as if, meaning in the same way that the Jewish people, when they were leaving Mitzrayim, every single person leaving Mitzrayim felt, I am currently experiencing a miracle. My life is miraculous. Look at what I just went through. A year ago, I was a slave. Now I'm literally witnessing miracle after miracle after miracle. And Hashem is literally just doing everything for me. I am a walking miracle. B'chol dor v'dor, in every generation, I need to get myself to feel that same way. Ki'ilu yatzam b'mitzrayim. In the same way that the Jewish people felt that way when they were leaving Egypt, why is my life any less miraculous? It's equally miraculous. How many miracles needed to take place for me to be sitting at the Seder table with friends and family, for me to be sitting and be, first of all, just the fact that my physical body is working. Number one, miraculous. Number two, the fact that me being a walking miracle, fine. But in order for me to even be here, how many multitudes, endless amount of miracles needed to happen for me to be here? Miraculous. For us to be sitting and learning together right now is incredible. And when we stop and really think about that, and we have the Hakaras HaTov, in the same way that the fellow bringing up their basket of fruit to the Beis HaMikdash is overwhelmed with the sense of, oh my gosh, look at what I'm doing right now. A nation that very easily could have been eradicated, not only was not eradicated, came to Eretz Yisrael, was able to inherit our ancestral land, grew produce, and now is able to bring it up to a Beis HaMikdash. That is miraculous. The same way that they feel that way through their Hakaras HaTov, that's the way we need to feel during the Seder, is our Hakaras HaTov. And so both of these aspects need to be at our Seder. That's our goal at the Seder, to tell over the story. And the more we elaborate on it, fantastic. And also to make sure that we instill within ourselves the sense of Hakaras HaTov, recognizing that my life is miraculous, recognize all of the gifts Hashem gives me. That is our job the night of the Seder. The Rambam actually highlights that these are really two separate obligations. Where the Rambam, Maimonides 1138 to 1204, Meiri said the Rambam was the greatest of all the Rishonim, was probably the greatest halachic codifier to ever live. There are some, the Rambam makes it into like the league of some of the other great halachists, people like Ravina Nirvashi or Rabbi Akiva. Like, we're talking about one of the greatest. The Rambam, in fact, on his kever, it's written, Lo kam kemosha ad Moshe. There was no one as great as Moshe Rabbeinu until Moshe ben Maimon, until the Rambam came along. Now, that's really a play on the Rambam's own words, because the Rambam wrote, he said, Lo kam kemosha, oh, there's never going to be anyone like Moshe Rabbeinu. But it was just a play on words to highlight the greatness of the Rambam. That's the type of person we're talking about. So the Rambam, when he codifies the laws of what we have to do the night of the Seder, so he writes, Mitzvas Aseh, there's a positive commandment upon us, Shal Torah, L'saper b'nisim v'neflo, Shenazla v'tinu v'metrayim, to tell over the stories of the great miracles that happened to our ancestors. In Egypt, B'leil Asar, Hamisha Asar b'nisan, on the night of the 15th of Nisan, the anniversary of Yetzias Mitzrayim. And then he writes the end of that halacha. He says, Afilu chachamim gedolim, even if we're great Torah scholars, which we say that in the Haggadah also, even if we know everything, doesn't matter. Nevertheless, chayavim l'saper b'yitzias Mitzrayim, we need to tell over the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim, but kol amarach b'dvarim, and the more we spend time elaborating on this mitzvah, shiiru v'shiyu harei zeh meshobach, so then that is praiseworthy. But then maybe 20 lines later in the Rambam, right? We're talking about one of the greatest over here. The Rambam seems to go through some form of a slight amnesia because he repeats, seems like he repeats this exact same mitzvah, not even 20 lines later, where the Rambam writes about the flow of the Haggadah. And he says that when we get to the paragraph about the section about Mikra Bikurim, about elaborating on the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim from the declaration of the Bikurim of the first fruits, he says, V'hushi Yidrosh Ma'arami Avi Avi, we're supposed to analyze that parsha, Achi Merkola parsha, of the recitation of the Bikurim, of the first fruits. But Kol HaMosif, Umarech, and anyone that adds on to the story and really analyzes the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim in the context of Bikurim, B'drosh Parsha Zu, Harizu Meshubach, that's praiseworthy. Didn't he literally just say that Kol HaMarba, Harizu Meshubach, that the more one talks about the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim, that's praiseworthy? Because over here, the Rambam's talking about the second obligation. The first time he's talking about the general obligation of telling over the story of the Exodus. The more we talk about it, the more praiseworthy. Now, he's specifically talking about the bringing of the first fruit. That the more we get into our minds, the more we establish within ourselves this sense of real hakaras hatov, really recognizing all of the amazing things we have in our life, just like we do when we bring our first fruits, harei meshubach. That's praiseworthy. The Rashbam, Rashi's grandson, in his commentary on Masechta Pesachim, actually says that is really the flow of the Haggadah. The flow of the Haggadah is such that we start with just simply telling a story, but then we conclude with the fact that we have absolute unwavering hakaras hatov for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, real gratitude for everything Hashem does for me. La'achar shelos haben, after the child asks their questions, hitcha lomer avad emayinu, we tell over the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim, v'gomer ha'agada, and how do we conclude the Haggadah? B'shevach v'hoda, with praise and thanks to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, with gratitude. That's the ultimate lesson. It's not just about telling over a story that happened in the past. We need to do that. And the more that we elaborate on that story, the better it is, because the Ramban writes that instills emunah within us. But that we need to take it to the second place of liras hasatz mikilu yatz mimitzrayim, that my life is just as miraculous, and that I need to have gratitude for every single thing that Hashem gives me, just like the person bringing their first fruits to Yerushalayim. The Maharal writes the same thing. He says, why do we even, what's the purpose of all the praise we give to Hashem? Just telling over the story, just simply to tell over a story. It's not It's not just simply to give praise to God, because what, God needs the praise? But rather it's to instill that within us, to instill with us this deep sense of hakaras hatov, how Hashem is doing endless amount of good for me all the time. We tell over all these praises of Hashem, in order so that I am not ungrateful for all of the amazing things Hashem does for me. And that, as we see, how do we conclude Magid? We come towards the end of Magid. As we're inching towards the end of Magid, we get to Dayenu, which we know Dayenu goes beyond the story of the Exodus. Dayenu starts with Ilu Ilu Hotzianu, Hotzianu Mimitzrayim, that we have to thank God for taking us out of Egypt. And then it goes through all the other amazing things Hashem does for us. He split the sea for us, and he brought us to, he gave us the man when we were traveling, and he gave us Shabbos, and he brought us to Har Sinai, and he gave us the Torah, and then ultimately brought us to Eretz Yisrael, and then gave us the Beis HaMikdash, Beis HaBechira. That was hundreds of years later. It's way beyond the story of the Exodus. It's way beyond Yetzias Mitzrayim. Because hopefully what the Haggadah did for us was frame for us just how miraculous our lives are, and that we need to be Makir Tov. We need to recognize all the good Hashem does for us. What's the opening line of Dayenu? How do we introduce Dayenu? Kama malos tovos. How many amazing things, how amazing are all the things that Hashem does, lemakom aleinu, that Hashem does for us. Not what Hashem did for us 3,000 years ago. That too, of course, obviously. It's what's framing the whole night. But that's supposed to get us to the conclusion of what Hashem does aleinu, for us. Building Hakaras HaTov is one of the most important things that we can do. And that's ultimately the goal of the Seder, is to build Hakaras HaTov within us. But why is Hakaras HaTov so important? Why is it to be grateful is something that's so fundamental? So there's really two reasons to this. Because there's two aspects of life, or really the only two aspects of life, that are directly impacted by a person's level of Hakaras HaTov. Number one, of course, the relationships with other people. The relationships with other people are directly impacted, whether it be positive or negative, on a person's level of gratitude. And number two is in the relationship with Hashem, their ben adam l'makom. When it comes to the relationship with Hashem, so then there's it has to be built on Hakaras HaTov. Because without Hakaras HaTov, I'm not going to fully commit myself to that relationship with Hashem. If I don't fully recognize how much Hashem gives me in my life, and how literally I have nothing without Hashem, ein od milvado, I'm not going to be completely committed to Torah and mitzvos. My commitment to Torah and mitzvos is built upon, is founded upon my Hakaras HaTov. That is what's written by the Abu Dhrum. The Abu Dhrum, one of the great Spanish commentators, he has an amazing commentary on the Siddur. He writes, he says that in the repetition of the Shmona Esrei, there's one bracha that we don't let the Chazan do for us, but rather we also do it along with the Chazan. That's the bracha of Modim, the blessing of gratitude. Why is it that you can't rely on someone else? You can't rely on an intermediary. You can't rely on the Chazan to say Modim for you. He says, because through Modim, through a recognition of all the gifts Hashem does to us, through creating gratitude within us towards Hashem, that is really what's the foundation for our commitment to Hashem. He writes, Ela kol adam tzarich lekabel b'piv ol malchus shamayim. I myself need to say Modim. I need to express my gratitude, because if I don't personally express my gratitude, so then my relationship with Hashem is going to be lacking, because my commitment to Hashem, His Torah, His mitzvot are going to be lacking. We find this in probably the most famous Pesach Seder of all time. The Pesach Seder that took place in Bnei Brak so many years ago with the five great rabbis, Rebbe Eliezer, Rebbe Yeshua, Rebbe Elazar ben Azariah, Rebbe Akiva, and Rebbe Tarfon. They were sitting by Rebbe Akiva in Bnei Brak, and they were having their Pesach Seder, Kol Osa Alayla, Ajuba Tamideim V'Amr Lehem Rabbe Seinu, until the students came and said, it's time for saying the Shema in the morning. Two basic questions on this story with the five rabbis sitting in Bnei Brak having their Pesach Seder. Number one is they couldn't see that the sun was rising through the window in the room. Why couldn't they tell that it was time to say the Shema? Number two is you have all morning to say the Shema. It doesn't need to be said right now. They're having this amazing Seder. So they'll keep going. Why do you have to stop and say the Shema? So the basic explanation of this is, what is the recitation of the Shema? What is the mitzvah of saying the Shema? The Mishnah in Brachos on Daf Yud Gimel says that the mitzvah of saying Shema twice daily in the morning and evening is Kabbalas Ol Malchus Shamayim, committing myself to Hashem, His Torah, and His mitzvahs. That's what I have to have in mind when I say the Shema. When I say the Shema, I actually need to have that in mind, that commitment to Hashem, His Torah, and His mitzvahs. If I don't, I actually don't fulfill the mitzvah of saying the Shema. In fact, Rav Volbe, Rav Shlomo Volbe, passed away in 2005, used to challenge his Talmidim and say, do you ever hesitate a little bit before you say the Shema? He said, what do you mean, hesitate before you say the Shema? Why would we hesitate? He said, what do you mean? Before every other big commitment, a person takes another second to think about it before they make the commitment. Nobody doesn't think before signing the papers, before signing the contract, before signing the real estate deal, because you're making a serious commitment. This is the most serious commitment of all time, committing yourself to Hashem, His Torah, and His mitzvahs. So we should think for a second before we do that. Make sure we're truly committing ourselves. At the end of this incredible Seder, where they told over the story, they built within themselves real Hakaras HaTov. That had to result in a Kabbalas Al Malchus Shamayim. It needed to result in a commitment to Hashem, His Torah, and His mitzvos, fully committing ourselves 100%, because I'm so grateful for all of the brachos HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives me because of my deep Hakaras HaTov. And in our relationships with other people, as we mentioned before. In fact, my Rebbe Reb David Hirsch, Shlita, one of the Rosh Yeshiva at YU, he was just in our community just about a year ago. He likes to say that the real mark of whether or not somebody is really a good fellow or not is their level of Hakaras HaTov. And it's really, he says, the wellspring of all other positive characteristics is dependent upon a person's gratitude. What I have over here in the source sheet in source 15 is the Tochen Inyanim, is the table of contents from the Orchos Tzaddikim. The Orchos Tzaddikim is an old work that gives a path to mastering each one of our characteristics. For example, you can look at any one of the ones that are listed here on the list. For example, envy. Is a person ever going to be envious if they really are Makir Tov, they really see all the good that Hashem has done for them? Pick another one. Kaas, anger. Is a person really ever getting angry? What am I getting angry about? Hashem's taken everything till now. What am I going to get angry about? Is a person ever going to get worried? Daga. Is a person ever going to get worried? No. Hashem takes care of everything. I have nothing to worry about. Look at everything else He's done for me till now. Ahava, love, the deep love that we can create for another person when we see and recognize all of the good, the blessing that they are in my life. There is every single one of these midos. Truth, emes. Am I ever going to not be truthful? I have nothing to lose by being truthful. Hashem takes care of everything. Every single positive characteristic is built upon Hakaras HaTov. Our interpersonal relationships is 100% completely dependent upon our Hakaras HaTov. That is what we're trying to gain from the Seder. What we're trying to gain from the Seder is telling over the story and passing on that story to the next generation, because by doing so, we're building emunah from one generation to the next. But then the second, equally integral and key aspect of what we're trying to accomplish at the Seder is building a sense of real gratitude, just like the one bringing up their amazing baskets of fruit to Yerushalayim and seeing through their Hakarat HaTov, through recognizing all of the good that they have, seeing that their life is miraculous at this moment. We too, the night of the Seder, need to build that deep emunah within us as well, in order to live the most meaningful life possible in our relationship with Hashem, of course, that is completely dependent upon my Hakaras HaTov, as Abu Dram pointed out, and in our relationships with other people as well, as it's completely dependent upon our level of gratitude. This, perhaps, is why Rabbi Yochum Levavitz, one of the greatest Musar minds of the last generation, the Mashgiach of the Mir Yeshiva, he writes, he says, that's really what the Haggadah means when it says, Kol Amar B'Lasaper B'Yitzias Mitzrayim Hariz HaMeshubach, that anyone that elaborates in telling over the story of Yitzias Mitzrayim is praiseworthy, it's considered praiseworthy. He says, the Lashon Meshubach, the language of praiseworthy, Kai, the subject of praiseworthy is Al HaMesaper, on the storyteller, on the one that is going through the motions of telling over all the story, giving over the information, because when you give over that information, you actually go through, he says, a transformation. The person themselves becomes more praiseworthy. Lashon mashpiach. The ayidei ribui hasibur. Through the more we tell about Yetzias Mitzrayim, through the more we instill within ourselves this deep sense of Hakaras HaTov, not only for the miracles HaKadosh Baruch Hu did for us then, but the ones that He continues to do for us to now. Kama malos tovos l'makom aleinu. All of the amazing things Hashem does for us now. So then, misaleu miskadel. a person becomes a great person because the relationship with Hashem is up to par and the relationship with other people is up to par. Namely, they now are living the most meaningful life possible. I'll just share, and with this will conclude an amazing, like unbelievable example of what it is that we're talking about here. That through real Hakar Satov, a person can reach literally the highest heights possible. This year for Klal Yisrael, specifically Achenu B'nai Yisrael, our brothers and sisters living in Eretz Yisrael, has not been an easy year. There have been many terror attacks and ones that were done in ways that were really, really horrific. And while we should obviously cry and take to heart every single one of them, there are some, though, at least for me, because I'm lacking in my Avos Yisrael, that some just hit differently. There's one in particular that I just haven't been able to shake since it happened back in February, and that was the murder of the Paley brothers, of Yaakov Yisrael Paley and Asher Menachem Paley. That Yaakov Yisrael was 5 years old and his brother Asher Menachem was 7 years old, and they were sitting by a bus stop on a Friday out doing some Erev Shabbos errands for their mom, and a horrible Yimach Shemo v'zichro, a terrorist Yimach Shemo, rammed into the bus stop, killing the two boys and a third person as well. Here are the two boys. Over here is a picture of the two boys. Their mom is someone who is literally superhuman. It has to be superhuman. Devorah Paley. Some of the things that she was saying at the Shiva were things like, they were happy children, good children who loved to help. They loved to do mitzvos. They go with their father on Motzei Shabbos to shul to review their learning. And now they're together in death as in life. And it's good for them. This is what she's saying at the Shiva. There's videos of her. It's unbelievable. Superhuman. And then she wrote, and this is just unbelievable. She said, we believe that just as Hashem gave them to us with love, he also took them from us with love. But the thing that she said that really, really got to me was what she was saying to people as they were coming to the Shiva. And there's a video of this, as I mentioned. When people were coming to the Shiva, as you can imagine, what are you going to say at a Shiva like that? What are you going to say? So for most people, the best they can do is come up with an oof. Ugh. Like expressing how horrific the situation is. When she heard someone say, oof, Devorah Paley responded and said, in this house, we don't say oof. We say kuf. Referencing Tehillim Kuf, Psalm 100, the Tehillim of Mizmor Letoda, the Tehillim thanking Hashem for all of the blessings he does for us, the Tehillim about gratitude, Mizmor Letoda. We don't say kuf in this house. We say kuf. When you have such a person that has Hakar Satov running that deeply through them, you become a superhuman like Devorah Paley that's able to deal with whatever she's dealing with now. I can't imagine that I am going to, and I would have a hard time really imagining that really any of us are going to be able to come out of our Pesach Seders, although it's possible, with that level of Hakar Satov, that level of Emunah, like a Devorah Paley. But it absolutely starts at the Pesach Seder. Not only just telling over the story, but also making it just like the one bringing their fruit to Yerushalayim. Of Va'anita Va'amarta, of the Lechem Oni, of declaring before Hashem in front of this matzah, declaring before Hashem, Thank you, Hashem, for all the incredible miracles we have. That moving forward, we don't say uf. We only say kuf. We only say thank you, Hashem, for all of the amazing miracles you do for me in my life. They are endless. They are boundless. And that we are always 100% committing ourselves to you, Hashem, and going to have the best possible relationships with other people, because I recognize every single blessing I have in my life. Chag Sameach, everyone.
Thank you very much, Rabbi. Chag Sameach, Shavua Tov.